If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Let's go to the moment that shocked even seasoned courtroom observers. And we're not going to make you endure Donna's weird looks again. We're just going to describe it. On September 4th, a jury convicted Donna Adelson on all counts, first-degree murder, conspiracy, solicitation, and the killing of her former son-in-law, Dan Markell. But what hit just as hard was what came after. Donna's stunted outburst kind of went something like, "Oh!" That's my impression of it. Audible gasps, near collapse. It wasn't just another conviction in the case. This was a matriarch, the chess master, realizing the game was over. Jennifer Coffendaffer is joining us, retired FBI special agent. I want to start right there with that courtroom moment where Donna got the news that she was, in fact, guilty. What did you think?
Well, I mean, didn't we sort of expect that? I mean, she's a highly emotional, highly charged, very dramatic, even with her earmuffs on inside out. She's a character, and yeah. I didn't expect for her to withhold anything. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think she really thought she might get off, because that's part of that mentality of thinking she's smarter and better and she's going to get away with it. So I think she was truly surprised. I really don't think it was fake.
Not fake, but what was the outrage? Was the outrage you caught me, or was the outrage you don't believe me, or was the outrage I'm now going to have to spend the rest of my life in prison because I was a participant in murdering my son-in-law?
The outrage was I lost.
Yeah.
I lost. I'm going to prison for the rest of my life. And that is a huge consequence of this chess game. And I think it was the realization, Tony, she lost.
Yeah. I can't say I'd be surprised if she thought she was going to be found innocent. I think to the rest of the world, everybody knew she was going to be guilty. But somehow in her mind, in her brain, this was somehow going to work out. Is that a product of her being just so insulated in her own way of thinking and only surrounding herself through most of her life with people that are just yes people? Whatever you want, Donna, we'll make it happen. Because we know if we say no to you, life's not going to be so great. We heard that from her son, Rob. Her attorney, her Tom Petty lookalike attorney that also seemed like Donna's doppelganger at the same time, seemed to be a shocking reflection of Donna in many ways. So I'm guessing there was a lot of insular thinking going on within the conversations there. Do you think there was anybody telling Donna, hey, this might not work out so well?
Probably not, not within her inner circle. Look, she's a winner, right? When you think about 75 years of her life or 74, 73, you know, before all of this started really hitting, she wasn't used to not getting her way. Mm-hmm. And I think she really thought she might, you know, get away with this. Mm-hmm. But she didn't. And that was the huge epiphany that happened in that moment.
She's 75 years old. Realistically, what is the prison time that she's facing, which is very likely the rest of her life, look like now that we're moving from jail, where we already know she didn't like that. She didn't like the bedding. She needed her earwax cleaned out more and more. Is it going to be easier for her in prison custody, or is this just going to keep going downhill?
No, it's going to get worse for her. And listen, people know who she is. I keep wondering if they're going to have to put her in seg, not because she's a danger to anybody, but because of those inmates being in danger to her from the standpoint of wanting to make a name for themselves. Mm-hmm. So whenever you have somebody famous like that and you have other prisoners in there that have nothing to lose, they're facing lifelong sentences. Sometimes really violent things happen for that reason.
Is there any sort of cushiness or a little bit, you know, less danger with the fact that she's 75? Does anybody look at that as, well, she's 75?
Nah. There's, you know, these women who commit these crimes or are locked up in these institutions for these long periods. I mean, this is a murder conviction, mm-hmm. Tony. So it's not like she's in there for shoplifting.
Yeah.
And because of that, she's going to be just seen by the rest of the inmates as just that. Now, mm-hmm. that's not to say that some of them might not develop, you know, a relationship with her. And, you know, there might be some positivity in that in sort of a weird way. But no, she's not going to get any special treatment from her fellow inmates at all.
Well, and it's also, I mean, it should be noted that going into this, she has a track record. She ended up having jailhouse snitches testify against her in her trial. And Donna did not come through on her promises of what she was going to give them. There was no grand piano. There was no 10 grand dropped. There was no hair extensions. There was a box of gas station food, basically, from the commissary that was given to one of the jailhouse snitches. So going into it, they're going to know that her promises, although they did seem quite grand at the beginning, are just that. They're empty. Donna was in jail using the inmates that she was around for her own gain. So she's going into this, not a lot of clout. There's no reviews of like, yeah, Donna's going to get you whatever you need. There's not going to be a lot of trust there off the bat either.
Yeah, I agree with you. The clout is down the drain. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, she wasn't the one that snitched. You know, I would mm-hmm. be much more worried about the snitches that have mm-hmm. to go back in because they are tainted, even though the quid pro quo didn't come through. And I'm sure that's what they're going to bring up as to why they snitched. But mm-hmm. nevertheless, I'd be much more worried about them than Donna in that regard.
You think there'll be a lot of calls to Harvey going, oh, we need to fill this canteen. We need to do this. Remember my mom's jewelry? Send that off to here. Send that off to there. I would think that she might be a hot target for extortion.
I totally agree with you. But I also think, you know, she's smart. She's savvy. She's manipulative. And she has means. Mm-hmm. She has means. So I think she's going to be able to use some of those means to make her life more bearable in prison. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be awful. Awful.
Could her legal team try to appeal any of this on the basis of age or mental state or, I don't know, that she baked them a banana bread or something?
No, I think her only chance is an appeal on Sixth Amendment. I mean, her attorney, you know, really was decent at times and not decent at times, and seemed, you know, the sleeping pill thing, I saw she fell asleep one time. I mean, you just have to wonder how effective her assistance of counsel really was. I'm sure that that will be one appealable item.
How appealable do you think it is? Because obviously, Tom Petty, Donna's doppelganger, all the names that we've been calling Jackie Fulford over the last couple of weeks, they haven't been super positive. And it's not like because she's been a superstar attorney and she just kind of, you know, looks like Tom Petty. She hasn't been her arguments were weak. They seemed to meander and go nowhere. Her choice of appearance. I mean, it looks like she went to Goodwill and bought a bad fitting men's suit and decided to wear that into court multiple days in a row. Just from the, you know, someone who's not of a legal mind, just a bystander. And you look at this and go, that's not a great attorney. I don't think surely a court would or a judge maybe would look at this and have some grounds. But other than appearance and kind of being sloppy, there's a lot of bad attorneys out there. It doesn't necessarily mean you get a new trial.
Yeah, I don't think she'll get a new trial, but I do think this will be an appealable point that they try to make. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to come out in the wash, though, Tony, that she gets a new trial, but I just think they're going to make a run at it.
How much do you think, let's start with Harvey, that Harvey needs to be concerned of anything after this? We know Wendy's probably got some questions lingering about her future, but what about Harvey?
Well, I don't think Harvey is in jeopardy unless they go after Wendy and they're mm-hmm. victorious in a conviction against her. Look, I think they're going to go after Wendy.
Yeah.
Even the response from the attorney, listen, we're going to let everybody rest. We're going to be able to take a moment after this, you know, successful conviction. But she sure didn't say no. And I just believe from what we've seen historically in this case, Wendy is next. If I were Wendy, I would be making all sorts of preparations and I'd be looking over my shoulder. I wouldn't be using my phone for anything, but what do I need to bring to school today for the kids or whatever? Mm-hmm. I would be so paranoid if I were Wendy.
Yeah, I don't know how she could not be paranoid at this point. And I would imagine that there... Do you think that there's still in an investigation circling around Wendy? Are her phones tapped? Are they watching her messages like a hawk? I would think like right now might be a key point where there might be some incoming and outgoing things that might raise an eyebrow or two.
Well, the biggest issue was do they have probable cause? Did they have probable cause to go up on what we call a Title III wiretap to even interface and intersect those phone calls? I don't think they did necessarily at this late time, mm-hmm. But certainly I think they're monitoring which they can do just via subpoena, quite frankly, the calls that are going in and out and what calls she might be making. You know, we call it, generally speaking, tickling the wire, even though mm-hmm. there's not a wire here likely. But when something like this happens, it's huge. And so you want to focus in on what did she do after? Who is she contacting? What's happening? But yes, do I think they've just completely dropped their investigation against Wendy? No.
Yeah, and there seem to be a lot of interesting pieces that came out here, further confirming things we already knew or suspected about Wendy's awareness of not necessarily the murder, but of something happening that day. That seemed to be at least confirmed many different ways that there was a knowledge of something that was going to happen. It could have been who knows what, but we don't necessarily out here on this side see that she knew there was a murder that was about to take place. Or do we? What are some of the pieces that came out here in this this trial of Donna that stood out to you that put it a big target on Wendy in terms of investigations and maybe finding another person to charge?
Well, what investigators and the prosecution are going to look at, listen, you have to show that there were at least two items that they can prove would have related to the conspiracy. We call them overt acts. So what overt acts can they pin on her to show she was part of it and that was important, if you will, to make sure that the murder could take place? To me, the big item is number one, you know, her knowledge of his schedule and mm-hmm. you know, the importance of that day that it seemed to be to Wendy. I think that to me is an overt act, her acquiring the schedule. When are you going to take the kids? All of that. And it was imperative to be able to do the hit, imperative that they knew exactly when he would be there and when the boys or when the kids would not be there. So that was critical.
One of the spookiest things to me of this whole thing was the swimming, where Dan was going to take the kids swimming that afternoon. He asks Wendy, hey, can I pick him up a little bit early, take him swimming? She initially says no. She calls Charlie, says something with Charlie, and then gets back to Dan and says, yeah, I changed my mind. It's okay. You can take the kids swimming. But one would have to assume this change of heart had something to do with knowledge that, well, that swimming's never going to happen anyhow because he's going to be dead by then. That all depends what Charlie said to her. We don't know that Charlie said, yeah, he'll be dead by then. Tell him whatever he wants. It could have been, tell him, sure, tell him it's fine. And then she might have just said, it's fine. We don't know the answer to that. But on the surface, knowing full well what all happened here, that doesn't look good.
I agree with you. And you know what, Tony, this is one of these cases. And again, the prosecution has done a great job up until now or to this point, and I would expect they would continue. This is a puzzle. It's it's like if you can picture a huge puzzle, and you know what, there's still about 10 pieces missing to make the puzzle add up fully into the full picture of who was involved and how did Dan Markell end up dying. And in my opinion, at least 8 of those pieces are Wendy. You needed Wendy for those pieces. And so because of that, I think if they show that totality, Tony, like you just talked about, sprinkle in the swimming incident, of course, the drive-by, of course, the getting the liquor, all of that, I think a jury could end up convicting. Yes, it's a weaker case. It's a circumstantial case, but many cases are circumstantial cases. It doesn't mean they're weaker cases. I think they could get a conviction. I really think they're going to charge her.
It makes you wonder what we haven't seen yet that is behind the scenes that they've just been holding there. You know, like, we don't need this for Donna. We don't need this for Charlie even. This will be helpful when it comes to Wendy. And we're just going to sit on this until then, until these puzzles pieces meet and we can finally add them in. The fact that it feels like, did they have any idea what their alibi was going to be in any of this, or did not feel like they were going to have an alibi in any of this, that they were literally reaching out to Wendy, was reaching out to her ex after acting very strange and go away, I don't want to be near you, I want space, I want this, but then I need to know where you're at this specific point in time, where you're driving, which happens to coincide to where my ex-husband is going to be murdered. That seems to be a little weird as well. Needing that information, needing to be back that day. Those are other key pieces to this puzzle. I guess my question is, did they have any sort of plan who they were going to try and pin this thing on, or did they think no one was going to ask any questions?
Well, I think they thought that it was going to look so random and they were going to just play off this, you know, random execution style shooting in a garage and hope that that would have some play. But it's never going to have play because you're going to have investigators thoroughly look at this deal. And remember, it took them a long time, Tony, I believe 2 years for charges because it was a complex case. And I think they got more and more confident that they were going to evade charges as time went on, but they didn't. And I really think it's just a case when you think you can outsmart law enforcement. I think that's part of what happened here.
There was, of course, all the things that Wendy had called Dan and STD, angry enough to kill him. All these sort of things that came out in court. And yes, some, you know, you get it. You're in a bad divorce. People say bad things. Not necessarily anything that necessarily means you're going to go murder someone, you know, verbatim. And the angry enough to kill him, that's the same. Oh, I could kill him. You know, that's not a murder threat. Was there anything that Wendy said this round that incriminated her further, or do you think she played her cards pretty safe with a lot of I don't remembers?
I mean, she played them safe, but it didn't. She did not come off as truthful, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. She came off as evasive. And, you know, part of any deal involving immunity is full, honest cooperation, testimony. And I think she fell well short of that bar. But as you said, fairly safe. I think what looks worse is some of this online information that is coming out. For instance, this information regarding this writing class she was in and just the horrible way she spoke of her ex-husband, Dan Markell. Mm-hmm. It's just so cold and so callous. I think that's going to work against her if she's charged.
What are some of those things that you're finding online from that writing class?
You know, just how she spoke of him. Mm-hmm. She kind of says, well, I didn't know really what to say about him. Do I call him my ex or do I call him deceased? Or, you know, what do I call him? And she puts the two words together and it makes up another word. And she says, well, I guess I shouldn't call him that. Ha ha ha. I mean, it is so cold and so callous, her overall discussion. But for me, what really got me was when she talks about marrying him. And she basically says she settled. She went with a guy that, she didn't love him, but that's okay because don't all marriages end up without love anyway? So I guess I'll just marry him anyway. It just paints this picture of a miserable woman, a woman that was completely self-absorbed and who had absolutely no love for Dan Markell. Maybe as early as years, you know, the years prior when she got married. I mean, that's what she says.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a reflection in the mirror of Donna, just a younger version in a lot of ways is what it really feels like. Harvey might be considering his lucky stars that he's never been taken out when Donna felt like, because you got to look at this. Wendy was very close with mom. I'm sure mom said a lot of these things too. We're like, well, all marriages are this or that. You're doing it for this reason and that reason and not for that. You put up with this, you put up with that. Obviously not the right reasons, but the reasons a very unhealthy, sick individual would be in a relationship and how they'd pull the levers basically just for their own gratification. Wendy was doing exactly what she was taught, and I don't know that she knew or knows any different. She seems to be kind of a very spooky individual with that being the upbringing and that being how her brain works. I wonder if she finds herself spooky sometimes going, God, I'm a product of what that woman created, and I don't know how to break out of this.
Well, Tony, you just led right into something else she reveals in her writing class. She talks about mama. And a couple of the interesting things she said was, first of all, she talks a lot about how mama thinks she's fat, she's overweight, she can't get into Weight Watchers because they say you're not fat, not overweight, but just kind of this self-absorbed obsession with herself that Wendy talks about her mom having. She doesn't say it really in a negative way. And then she goes on to say, and this is kind of prolific, particularly after your comment, she says, basically, I wouldn't be what I was without my mom molding. It's really spooky. You got to listen to that cut. It's really spooky.
They are just a gross family, a very self-absorbed, sick family. One of the things that really got me more angry than so much of any other piece of this trial was learning that the Markells, the parents of Danny, had only seen their grandkids three times since the murder. So the thought process in the court system was, we're going to keep the kids with the murderer's family, and the family of the deceased doesn't have any rights to see their own grandchildren. It took like an act of literally legislation for them to be able to see their grandkids. That to me was really sick. And really, there's plenty of reasons for a responsible parent to restrict grandparent visiting, just like Danny was trying to do, because you have one grandparent trying to turn a parent against their own children. That's a good reason not to have grandma in the picture. Not these two. These two were just trying to share their traditions, share their lives, share their customs, share who they are as a family with their own flesh and blood. But these monster Adelsons over here, we're not going to do that. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah. You know, when you look at it, this happens so often in cases, yeah. Right? Whenever the surviving spouse before the court, they are going to have full control of those children. And pretty much there's nothing that can abate that unless they're convicted or charged with something. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, the power was so much on the side of the Adelson board. And the Markells really didn't have any power without fighting, as you pointed out, tooth and nail, and look at the time that that takes and so on. So unfortunately, that's usually how these play out.
It's so sickening. I mean, it's especially that to me is a massive sign of guilt right there. If you were having something to do with this, and obviously she's innocent till proven guilty, she's never been charged. The fact that you would deny this, you're the dad of your kids and they're close to their family, to him over there, and you deny that then after your own damn family killed him. If you want to look innocent, I think maybe having some interaction there might have been the better move. But clearly, they don't make good decisions.
Well, Tony, let's go back again to this writing paper.
Yeah.
She actually talks about Dan Markell. And one of the reasons she married him was he'd be a good father. And she talks about the fact he was a good father. But yet she was willing to take the father of her children off the face of the earth in such a horrific way. So do you think she had any sort of empathy for those grandparents? No way. Her world is this big, and right in the middle of it is her face.
I don't think she has empathy. I think that's the answer to it. And if she's a clone of Donna, empathy ain't part of the cards. And that's the sad reality. Obviously, never been charged with anything. These all just, you know, speculation and all of that. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, you're dealing with mini Donna. And we see that Donna doesn't seem to know any length to which she won't go for what she wants to get done. I would hope maybe Wendy can find some semblance of empathy to remain some part of her children's lives, because I'm going to guess there's going to be a bit of a break in there or permanent separation going forward. Fascinating conversation, as always, about the Adelsons. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, thank you for your insight.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.